history of America that looks back 400 years. No small feat for an author, right? This week, Techonomics host Jason Middleton has two segments about Americana, how the American economy has been disrupted, then grown, and what may be ahead. That conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening as ever. Next up, we have two segments with a scholar, an entrepreneur, an author, a historian, and a TED presenter, which I think puts the Techonomics count of TED talkers at 6 for us. The subject is not exactly bite-size either. It's the history of America, told through the lens of disruption.
It should be noted that even the Mayflower was financed as a for-profit venture, basically by 17th century venture capitalists.
This is from the book trailer for Americana.
And this sets off 400 years of American capitalism.
Now, a disruptive technology or new approach used to spark economic disruption that led to another wave of tech and adaptation. That same dynamic may not hold true in this age of Silicon Valley, artificial intelligence, and automation, at least not for this author.
There are these counterintuitive things that you protect blue-collar workers in these swing states. You know, I mean, obviously, they're the force in American politics right now. No matter how rich the West Coast has gotten, Washington is controlled by basically these four swing states. You know, that's the major play. You know, no Democrat is going to lose a traditional blue state. No Republican is now going to lose a red state in the South, anywhere else. But those four swing states of Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan,
right,
is very, very stunning.
Here's my chat with the author of Americana.
Boo Srinivasan. No, I'd say first-time author with his book Americana.
First-time author?
Yes, yes.
Well, you didn't want to start with a short story? Or a haiku or something, maybe?
You could say, you know, media entrepreneur with a background in, you know, in content from ranging from pop culture to financial content to news aggregation.
We're going to dig into all of that, news aggregation, because I came from newspapers and I have a bone to pick with you.
So, oh, is that right? Okay.
Let's talk about, first of all, the impetus behind your book. The new book is called Americana, A 400-Year History of American Capitalism. And the reason I was joking about the short story as first-time author was because I believe it's 526 pages, riveting pages, very much snackable, very much movable because of the anecdotes you use. But that's a big chunk.
Well, thank you very much for saying that it's a easy breezy read or a book that's over 500 pages.
Right.
But yes, the structure really helped quite a bit in terms of making it a little bit more approachable and accessible, because obviously it's a very heavy history. It's 400 years and you're covering a vast amount of ground.
Mm-hmm.
So even in writing it and researching it, it certainly helped. And hopefully it's easy for the reader as well to follow this type of an approach. And so the structure of the book is next big things. And my view was that if you can trace American economic history as a series of next big things. And certainly there were lots of periods where you had next big things that completely transformed American society. Smartphones since 2007 to now. Definitely. You know, there are periods when that has happened before with automobiles and starting in the 1910s, very dramatic restructuring of American society. So I wanted to see what are other things that perhaps we don't necessarily know about or haven't thought about that were equally transformative, and how fast were they transformative? You know, how compressed was that transformation?
Sure.
And I think when you start investigating those types of stories, and then many times one next big thing is a compounding effect of a previous next big thing. So mainframes to PCs, PCs to the internet browser to smartphones. You know, obviously you had people with those candy bar cell phones in the 90s, but, you know, they are used to the internet browser at home and they want to be able to have that internet browser on their phone,
right,
when they're out and about. So all of a sudden you have this incredible breakthrough in the smartphone. But in retrospect, obviously, it seems obvious.
Yeah, when Steve stood up there, he had to say it twice.
Right.
Because the audience wasn't getting it the first
time.
They
were not getting it.
It's an iPod,
in that trailer. Right.
It's a phone. And it's an internet communicator.
And that's exactly right. It's an incredible thing, right? And so he had to go a couple times, and then the audience gets it and starts laughing. You know,
right.
Three separate products today.
I'm going to start where you started, with venture. What was the conclusion you were able to draw?
You know, basically, from my experience in coming to this country, I'd felt that the last 30 years were shaped by these incredible next big things, primarily in computing, primarily in Silicon Valley based companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have, obviously, you have the five big tech companies, the two Seattle companies included, Amazon and Microsoft. They're worth over $3 trillion. And almost all of them have venture capital roots at their base: Sequoia, Kleiner Perkins, the big Silicon Valley venture companies, Benchmark and Uber. Obviously, many of these huge companies have venture capital at their roots very early on in their existence. And I wanted to see, I didn't actually want to see, I ended up stumbling into it, and then it just ended up giving me the structure for the narrative, which is, you can go back all the way to the Virginia Company, and you realize that the people that financed the Virginia Company, and then subsequently the Mayflower, were known as adventurers. And in fact, the people that financed the Mayflower were these men known as merchant adventurers that had been used to financing New World ventures. Prior to that, they'd financed privateering syndicates, meaning mission pirate missions. So, you know, obviously, when they were building the Macintosh at one time, they had a pirate flag outside of it rather than the Apple flag. You know, Steve Jobs did that. So there are these kind of these coincidental factors that said, oh, my God, this is interesting. And then it raises the question that you don't hear in your grade school history, which is, how did a bunch of religious separatists that were persecuted end up financing a large ship to come to the New World? You know, if I were to tell you that 100 people in Central America chartered a 737 to come to America with a year's worth of supplies, you'd ask why and how was that possible?
At the time, news aggregators were a threat. They were a disruption. They were eating our business. They were eating our margins first, and then they were eating our jobs. Okay, so that's an existential threat. Now we're looking at automation, AI, ML, disrupting a labor force. And there seems to be a lot of pearl clutching and agitation around that. What kind of conclusions did you get to with that?
That's very interesting that you've connected news aggregation with perhaps what's going on. Obviously, that's a small sliver of what's happening. And you'll notice now, most of the newspapers are back to saying we need to charge for content. You know, replacing dollars with digital dimes really didn't make any sense. And how did we ever fall into this trap that all information needed to be free from the get-go?
No, the industry stepped over a dollar to pick up that dime, and that was a massive mistake 25 years ago.
That's exactly right. And the first part, the only party that really didn't do that was the Wall Street Journal, and that's one of the reasons why they really haven't had much disruption at all. And then the New York Times, remember, when they started to charge, there was a big uproar that would that ever work? And, you know, within, a year and a half, it was a $100 million plus business. And remember that, you know, to merely charge for that seems so simple now in retrospect, but the New York Times just started appreciating their own pricing power.
Exactly.
And that's a similar thing now that, you know, there are things that seem counterintuitive. And I think that there's tremendous political dislocation in America. And that counterintuitive trends are, do we look at tariffs again? Certainly this is something with NAFTA being the United States looking to withdraw from NAFTA, certainly withdrawing from TPP. You know, there are these counterintuitive things that, do you protect blue-collar workers in these swing states? You know, I mean, obviously, they're the force in American politics right now. No matter how rich the West Coast has gotten, Washington is controlled by basically these four swing states. You know, that's the major play. You know, no Democrat is going to lose a traditional blue state. No Republican is now going to lose a red state in the South, anywhere else. But those four swing states of Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan,
right,
is very, very stunning. So, and I think certainly places like what happens with Uber drivers when self-driving cars start replacing them very dramatically, very quickly, this whole gig economy,
yes,
you know, Postmates delivery, what happens with FedEx and UPS drivers when you have self-driving UPS trucks and the last mile is done through drones, where, you know, the vast majority of packages dropped off for less than 5 pounds, which drones now are capable of doing that. So I think that over the next 10 years, you could see even more labor displaced, even before you get to real AI.
Other people who have sat in that chair have told me that the Industrial Revolution did not kill off farmers. It created more jobs and career opportunities and actually expanded an agrarian economy. How did they see that? How did they see that transformation coming, and how did they cope with it?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I mean, I think that to try to always draw historical parallels, sometimes, I'll give you a case in point. Until a few years ago, India had over 60% of its people still engaged in agriculture. Okay, and now it's still probably a very, very substantial amount, double-digit percentages, all nearly half, probably still around 40% or so. And then obviously in America, it's less than a couple percentage points. You know, the number of people that are dedicated to agriculture, and America's a tremendous food producer and food exporter as well.
Right.
And then you have industrial scale, obviously. And when you have industrial scale, you know, to build, you have, you know, you're continually trying to bring down marginal costs and unit costs by, you know, a million cars is far cheaper to produce on a per car basis than 100,000 cars. With software, on the other hand, which are the next big things of the past 35 years, there is no marginal cost at all. So you're able to spread basically zero costs. And at the same time, you're seeing how those ramifications for the workforce, because you have five companies that are worth over $3 trillion, and they collectively employ less than a million people in the United States. Less than a million. I mean, you're talking about more than $3 million per employee in terms of market value.
Yes.
And at the same time, the American consumer and the American worker in a Ohio or a Pennsylvania cannot meaningfully contribute to that next big thing as a producer. they can only be a consumer.
Right.
Whereas in previous next big things, even with the automobiles, with steel, with the railroads, no matter how efficient, he was also starting to be a consumer of it. And there was this kind of the circular thing. But the next big things of the past 45 years simply do not have that. You know, you have, you know, someone that's educated from India has more opportunity at Google than someone that's high school educated from Ohio. And that decoupling is the scary thing. And I don't think that there's necessarily a historical parallel that tells you exactly what is going to happen or what the ramifications are, because this is a fairly new thing. I mean, the software is eating the world. That's a innovation is new, you know, so it's not always, you know, something where you can trace back to the past. You know, the network effects is not something that you've seen in an agrarian economy at all. And yet, you know, that's the thing that Facebook benefits from quite dramatically.
That was Boo Srinivasan. For our purposes, he's the author of the sweeping yet accessible new book titled Americana. For history buffs, new as well as seasoned, it's a solid recommended read. That was also just part one of our two interview segments. So please stick around after the break when we talk with Boo Srinivasan about
Facebook and Google cannot operate very freely in China, obvious. And you would say to the Chinese, you could say to the Chinese that, look, you've missed out on all the Silicon Valley technology. Here are these great services from Google and Facebook, and the Chinese consumer missed out on this. And the Chinese would argue back, so what?
If you want to listen contiguously, please look for the podcasts that we post. They're at Stitcher, Audio Boom, and KGORadio.com. Just keyword search Techonomics. Part two of Americana, how disruption is part of America's DNA. That's next on Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton, and please come on back.